Hey guys, what you're about to see is a small clip of a longer episode from the Babylonian Pastor podcast. In this episode, me and Rob talk about transitioning pastors and leadership and how it can be done well. Hopefully, this is helpful. If you like it, make sure you like the video and share it with others that may also find it beneficial. Here's the clip.
Yeah, it's, I think we have a lot of problems in our culture, Michael. I know that's probably news
to
you.
No, we don't.
You're not really involved in the culture much and not really learned when it comes to cultural things. So I'll just tell you that there are lots of problems out there.
I think,
honestly, one of those being something that I thought of, it really is just comedically when you were talking just a few minutes ago, but it's not funny, is I can just imagine like some of the reaction that you would get, some of what might pop in somebody's head when we're talking about this is, but I don't think that they have Snapchat. How will I talk to them? You know, it's like, honestly, communication in general is just a barrier in our culture, because I mean, we really do. I mean, it's a lot of, I mean, you're in the meme world. It's a meme for sure. It's probably been a million memes, but like we live in a culture that like you can't break up with a person that you're dating unless it's a text. And a brief text, and then block them so you don't have to interact. You know, like
wow, you are blocking.
It's just like
it's very solid and final.
There are lots of. I think one of the things that's being uncovered here as we're talking about this, honestly, is that like the amount of issues involved that are working against real, genuine. Church discipleship, it's a big hill. There's a lot of stuff in the way, and but I can imagine a situation in which, you know, like maybe the church culture is such, person grows up in that, and the church culture is such that before I think about going to YouTube, I'll ask Jerry, you know. Like that can happen, and it should be the way that it happens. And I'll say that while confessing that I'm like a YouTube mechanic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what I do, you know?
Well, it's quicker. And, I mean, let's be honest, it's quicker than calling somebody and seeing if they have time and having, again, that's that cultural breakdown. It's that mm-hmm. we live so quickly that, and that's just simply not the sort of way that obviously when Paul is writing to Titus, I mean, the letter itself took forever to get there. So it's just a matter of like, there's just this speed and efficiency that we feel like we need. And it's not that that's bad. It's not bad. I mean, it's good that there's stuff like that available, but I think my point is just making sure that that doesn't get in the way of that communication. And I think there's a huge part of that on the side of the sort of the older, whoever is above the person asking the question, right? Of having patience. I mean, cause there's some words that kids say that I don't even know what they mean anymore. So whenever you're trying to like give advice, it's just, you're like, you're going to have to give me an entire dictionary on what you just said. So I know how to communicate this.
Have side note about that kind of thing, that language thing. Have you seen the Babylon Bee, the little video thing that they made for the Masters University?
No, I saw a link to it. I haven't watched it, no.
Bro. I know there are people in the audience that are going to flip, and I'm going to ruin your whole channel by saying this name, but MacArthur.
Wow.
They have MacArthur on there speaking this like Gen Z thing. He has like some line. It is the funniest thing.
I saw a clip of that and I legit Oof. Thought it was, I thought it was AI. I saw a clip of that and I thought somebody has had a computer make him say things. So that's real. That's a real, wow. Okay.
But it is a real thing though. Like the whole like language barrier, and it is for every generation. isn't it? I remember the same thing. When like our own parents and or grandparents or whatever, you know, like there's always some sort of barrier like that for sure.
The other day I asked Haley, I said, do you, if I say the phrase getting jiggy with it, do you understand what I mean? And she goes, you're an idiot. I have no idea what you're talking about. And I was, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. Well, you slap somebody publicly and your whole career is over and everyone forgets you. You
know, nobody, I mean? Nobody cares about getting jiggy. Yeah. So, but yeah. In that, like that,
even
whole
though
thing,
we're in the millennium,
we're in the millennium. What are you?
Yeah. You don't know what I'm referencing, do you?
I have no idea. I have no
idea. Well, getting jiggy with it. It was Will Smith, right?
Was that back the album? In the day.
Millennium is one of the songs that I think was on that album. I don't know. It's yeah, we definitely, if the MacArthur thing didn't do it, this did. So yeah. Sorry, man. Sorry. It's over. It's been a good run.
It's been a good run on the podcast. I'm going to have to look that up here in a minute. So, with that, with living in the millennium and, you know, having to have a whole dictionary of terminology, I think it is imperative to be patient with those you're talking to, because there's going to be questions there's people that probably come to you that ask a question. And you're like, you don't know that. And I think part of that is also understanding that people you go to and ask those questions have probably the same thought about you, but they're being super patient with you. I know there's 1,000 questions I've either asked my dad or my father-in-law that they've probably in their head thought, I thought you were an adult, and they just don't say it out loud and are incredibly patient with asking that question.
I thought for sure you weren't an idiot. Okay. Yeah. we can do that. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a guarantee that they've thought that. And so it's a matter of, you know, having that and being patient. So with that being like, so I think that sort of closes that chapter. So you have obviously a place where in the home, you're raising your family, your kids, you're training them up. There's this whole other aspect in the church that Paul lays out in Titus 2. Let's talk about that sort of another very more niche aspect of this, of raising up the next sort of leadership in the church. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean just pastors, but I definitely want to talk about that. But just a whole leadership in general, what that looks like, the difficulty of that. And really, honestly, when we're talking about this, my concern, I think, is in glaringly obvious examples that I'm not sure how are going to turn out, such as like MacArthur. When he dies, who in the world think? I mean, Grace Community Church is MacArthur. When Matt Chandler leaves the Village, what is that? Matt Chandler is the Village Church, right? The whole thing, the whole ordeal when Mark Driscoll blew up Mars Hill, like all those churches just sort of spun off into this randomness because nobody had a backup plan. And so, or there's no backup plan that I'm aware of. And you have that on a much smaller scale in local churches as well. I mean, like, so when I did that that video essay on Andy Stanley, part of that was looking at Charles Stanley. And there was a part where Charles Stanley gets a job at a church, and it's basically because there was just this pastor leaving, and they had no backup plan. They're like, hey, do you want to come? Do you want to do this? And there's like, you did, like, it's just, that's just so typical of a church not to have a plan in place for somebody to come in after. It's just like, I gotta work it out. Well, yeah, I mean, he's in control, but you should probably try. So it's just a matter of like, let's talk about that next sort of leadership. And I think your example, just from like sort of whole your transition, I think that's a pretty good example of that.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, the God will work it out mentality, I think just logically that doesn't play. Right. Because you wouldn't say that if like bills were on your table. You know what I mean? God will figure it out. I don't have to mail these in.
He'll pay
you. Like, that's stupid. That's stupid. So that's not. That's
I
not
sowed my
God,
faith.
God
seed.
Will indeed.
Somebody
work
will
it
mail
out,
me a
right?
check. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no big deal. I think so. Sometimes transitions in churches look a little bit more like David and Absalom and Solomon than they should. I like where if you're not familiar with that and you're living, you know, like it was an obvious joke, but at the same time, like Absalom attempts to take the kingdom away from David, and his son is David's son, Absalom. And Solomon was always going to be the one rule. And the short version is David, you know, that doesn't happen. It's like, nope, I don't think so. And Solomon gets anointed king, and Absalom is killed by David's right-hand man. And then David mourns, right? And sometimes church transitions feel like that.
That tracks with a lot of the ones I've seen. Yeah, that tracks.
I mean, so that's probably fairly close to Mars Hill reenactment. You know what I mean? Like,
nobody tried to take over, but yeah.
Except the kingdom exploded, right? Yeah, no one tried to take over because they would have found themselves in an MMA ring, but
that's probably truer than we'd like to admit. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy frustrates me, man. I just saw him on Twitter and he said something good, and I was like, I'm not even gonna like that though, because that, I don't know. I don't want to be that guy. Anyway, my own transition into this role followed a really rough thing that happened in a similar. So there was a pastor that we had that he was a good dude, you know, and did the job well. He cared for people and preached the word and the things that you want, right? I mean, the bullet points you want, and yet there was some control issues, for lack of a better way to put it, to the point that there's a really misunderstanding of his role among the other elders, and so there was like a, this is me up here, this is you under me, so at the end of the day I'm the boss, which is not the case. It's not the case biblically either. That's not how it works. Anyway, that turned into kind of a mess, because there was that, it really isn't a whole lot different than what I was explaining earlier. There was that person who had so much ownership of this ministry that they weren't willing to give to work with others, and so that didn't end well. Right. It felt a little bit more like David and Absalom. But then the guy who, he was on staff at the time, he was a pastor of discipleship. He kind of filled the role, for a time of lead. He was like, don't change my title. Don't any of that stuff. Right. Like, but
I'm helping, chill out. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, short version is he took me under his wing, and I was always going to end up doing this somewhere, somehow, or whatever. It was a calling. And so he took me under his wing and began to intentionally give away his power, if you will, his authority, responsibilities, those kinds of things. And so to the point that when the most obvious public pastoral thing is preaching, so I began to preach once a month regularly. Then I preached twice a month regularly. And then we got to a point where I was preaching on like any major holiday or those kinds of things. When it came to developing those things, I began to have more interaction with what are we preaching? What does that look like? How is that gonna play itself out? And then just other things, you know, like someone passed away and he took me with him to go visit family and just hang out, develop things. And that there was a lot of that just osmosis kind of stuff, but like intentional osmosis. I didn't have to seek him, find him, and then follow him around like a puppy. It was all intentional. And that, by the time I was getting ready to actually be voted on and assume this role that I'm in now, I was preaching all but once a month, and he would preach once a month. And, I was doing a lot of the, like I was leading, I was a worship leader here, before that. So I was kind of transitioning that as well onto the shoulders of others. So there was a lot of real intentionality on his part. And like, to this day, I don't know how much of it was planned and how much of it, he just is like that. So he was living it out, you know. It was probably a lot more of the latter, frankly, but it really, I think, showed me what I need to do, which is the whole point of this conversation that we're having. And so now, he was at a point of kind of retirement. Like he wanted, his mother is still alive. She's like in her mid to upper 90s, I think, or something at this point. But he wanted to get back closer to his mom. That he has a son who is mentally slow, and so he lived in a specific place to help with that, and he needed to get closer to that. So there were some legitimate, like, I need to retire and move on from here. So, you know, it wasn't like, let's form a search committee and let's look all over the nation and hope that the interview is the actual guy you're getting. And it wasn't any of that. It was, okay, well, here's a guy who's going through training anyway, who's going to be doing this anyway, who the congregation knows anyway. And he poured into me, and here I am. And so now I'm not ready to retire. And I hope that they're not ready for me to retire quite yet. But we have two guys in seminary training right now who fill the pulpit at times. I never at this point have to go like anywhere else to get, like, if I'm going to be gone, there's no like reaching out to somebody to see if they can preach. I just harness Tanner or Marshall. And the past, when my mother-in-law was passing away and all that was going on, I had to miss a couple of Sundays. And all I did was text a group, both of them at the same time. And it was like, they arm wrestled for it, you know, like they're eager. They want the opportunities to grow. And so, So some of that included sermon development. Like, they've been in my office and on the whiteboard, I'm showing them what I do, and I'm their official mentor person for seminary. So there's some stuff that we do there regularly. They share the Sunday school teaching load with me, which means that they're breaking down not only whatever we're doing in Sunday school, but what do we want to do in Sunday school. And they're in those discussions. They're in discussions with me when I have worship leader meetings and things like that. So it's what Jeff did for me really played out in me wanting to do the same thing for other men, and in training them up. And so, it was really good, really helpful. Yeah. I can't think of like a better, you know, example that I could have had.
What you're describing there, two things I want to say about that. One, there's probably somebody listening going, man, I wish I had that. Like, I can't find one person. Like, I can't find one person to even want to do anything, let alone somebody that I can get up coming underneath me. But secondly, the thought that comes is that one, and we obviously don't have time to get into this. It could be a whole nother podcast, probably, but the fact that the reason that you're able to do that is because of, and I'm sort of speaking, I'm bringing other experiences in here to make an assumption probably, but that you have a fairly healthy church, and because you have a fairly mm-hmm. healthy church, you're able to utilize, like, that's a whole nother step, right? If somebody doesn't have that sort of thing in their church, there's some development to be done on the back end before you can't just jump in the deep end of the pool right here and be like, well, I'm going to grab somebody and do this. Like, there's a lot of things that come before this, but the reality is, this is, I would argue, this is the healthiest way to do it, in regards to finding a guy that, or if you're just talking about just different ministries in the church in general, finding somebody that you can go, hey, that person has, the gifting and the ability to do this. And I'm going to, again, not be like, hey, it's yours now, but bring them under my wing and have that. What I love what you said about Jeff there, that intentional process of saying, hey, come along. Like, I don't want you to do anything. I just want you to watch. Just come along and hang out and see how this works. And so that, again, that learning through osmosis is so important that it's not none of the stress is on your shoulders. None of the, like, nothing. You're just watching it and seeing how this process works out. And all you're doing is learning. Like, there's no hands on for you. You just need to stay and just look and watch and observe. And then the idea is that eventually over time, you start to do little pieces of it. And then again, it's just this real slow process of transfer that happens over time. And I think that's something we've lost just in general, not just the church, but just, I mean, you train somebody at work, it's like, boom, 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 here's the books, here's the thing, go do it. And that's just not how people learn, really, not well, at least. And so what you just sort of laid out is just this beautiful picture of saying, like, why would I need to look outside of my church to find somebody to preach? I have guys that can do that. Why would I need to look, do this whole huge search committee when we have a system developed to bring up somebody within the church? And I think there's so many good things about that. And you named one of them, like, people already know you. They already know your personality. They already know how you do things. They're already familiar with you. Like, there's not this shock of, like you said, I hope the guy we interviewed is the guy we get, because I've seen that process before happen where the guy you interview isn't the guy you get. And it wrecks everything, literally wrecks when I say wrecks everything, I mean literally destroys the church. And so, and I'm just saying, like, some people leave. I mean, the church doesn't exist anymore. And so it's one of those things where the intentionality that Jeff had, like what you said, that came out of probably some legitimate, I don't want to see this thing that happened before me happen again. That birth, this process and this intentionality of leadership to say, all right, what do we need to do to put in place to make this happen well? And I think far too often the churches operate like a business where we're like, well, who's the best? Let's do all these candidates and we'll figure out who's the best person to do this.
Yeah.
And the reality is what you described, I think, is a very biblical method here. I mean, you're looking at Titus and Timothy and even the leader of Ephesians, which we won't get there. But if somebody wants to go read Acts chapter 20, starting at verse 17, I mean, Paul speaks to the Ephesian leaders and says, hey, guys, here's the deal. There's a bunch of you. There's going to be some problems that come along. You need to look for it. But what is he doing there? All he's doing is saying, like, he's giving some great advice on saying, like, I've seen this. You're going to see this. This is how you should deal with it. And there's a lot of tears involved because he loves them. And again, there's this intentionality. There's this relationship involved there, not just this business of do it well and do it right. It's this relational situation they've built. And I think when we're talking about especially leaders in the church and that transition, like, I don't have a whole lot to add to what you said, because it is this, it's this, I think it's the right process. And the sad thing, unfortunately, is that a lot of churches don't have that for either one, because they have a business mentality that we need to hire the next manager, or two, they're not healthy enough to have that process in place, probably because the person that was leading wasn't healthy to set that up. And so now they've set the church up for failure because they were again, like you talk, the just this power control, like it's all my ministry. Well, what happens when you're gone? Like what happens when you're gone? Like, great for you that you have all the power, but what does that mean later for everybody else? And so, I just think that I've seen it go terribly, absolutely terribly during transitions. And what you're describing to me and what I see in other leaders that I know is the exact same thing you're talking about. Slowly transitioning people in is absolutely the healthiest way to do it. Hey guys, thanks for watching all the way through. And if you did and you're not subscribed, make sure you subscribe for the full episodes that'll be upcoming in a few weeks. If you want the whole episode all together, make sure you join Patreon. They get the full episodes before everyone else does. And if you found this helpful, make sure you tune in next week where Rob explains sort of the process that they went through to get where they are now. I'll talk to you later.